One of the big issues facing the next mayor of Boston is how to fix the city's police department. The agency's got several problems right now. It's without a permanent leader, embroiled in multiple scandals, and officers are facing criticism for not just doing more to reduce crime. As WBUR's Ali Jarmanning reports, some Bostonians wonder if a new mayor will even make a difference.
It's a steamy Saturday afternoon in Grove Hall, the Boston neighborhood where Dorchester and Roxbury meet. People here are used to sirens, police stops, and yellow crime scene tape. But on this day, the folks hanging out in this empty lot browse books by Black authors as part of a Juneteenth book fair.
$18.
Jazara Pierre wrangles her toddler son as he pulls picture books off the table.
Oh, let's not put it on the books.
Like many in this neighborhood, Pierre doesn't give the department very high marks.
A D for effort. Because, I mean, again, 2021, we're still having to deal with a lot of BS that's just not humane and warranted in our community.
The mom from Hyde Park isn't comfortable calling the police when she sees someone in distress because she worries about what the police might do. And Pierre feels the problems with the police are so entrenched that it'll be difficult for the next mayor to fix them.
Honestly, I'm not that hopeful. If they put a commissioner in who's really all about making those changes, will he or she make a dent? Possibly. If one person can do it, go for it. Let's do it. But it's going to take a lot.
Boston has a police department in disarray. The police commissioner was fired over domestic violence allegations. More than a dozen police officers have been charged with overtime fraud. The former head of the police union is accused of molesting children. And the department has long faced criticism over whether it does enough to solve shootings in the poorer parts of the city.
I hope, you know, whatever your religious or non-religious tradition might be, that you have something like prayer, because you're going to need a little bit of a miracle.
That's Ray Hammond. He's pastor of Bethel AME Church and a member of BMA 10 Point, an anti-violence organization. Mayors, Hammond says, do have powers beyond prayer. They can choose the commissioner, set the budget, and then there's the bully pulpit.
I think they can set a tone. I think they can put in place policies that put folks on notice that corruption will not be tolerated.
Most of the candidates think that there should be a national search for the next police commissioner, something that hasn't happened since 2006 under Mayor Menino. And most support cutting police overtime and using the money to expand social services. The six major candidates also have a variety of other proposals covering everything from body cameras to police discipline. But Reverend Hammond says overhauling the department won't be quick or easy.
It's a little bit of a briar patch. Making change is hard. It can eat up a lot of your political capital. And you may not have a lot to show for it because it's a long-haul change.
Some local activists say past mayors haven't done enough. Jamal Crawford was part of the latest attempt at reform, a task force set up by Mayor Walsh last year. That group recommended a new civilian oversight board and a host of other reforms. Those changes have been slow going.
This is like, you know, getting people out of a cult, deprogramming. And people have to have the political will to get that done. And that's just to get the ball moving because it's still not going to be done overnight.
Of course, Boston isn't the first city to face these kinds of problems. One person who has worked with other troubled police departments around the country is Chuck Wexler. He's the executive director of the Police Executive Research Forum. He says some other cities in much worse shape than Boston have been able to fix things over time. And he's confident Boston can do the same.
You've got some internal issues there that have to be dealt with. And there may be some larger issues, you know, in terms of, you know, internal affairs and in terms of accountability. But certainly they're fixable.
Wexler says the most important decision the mayor faces is who will become the next police commissioner.
That is your key player in how that police department is run.
But many Bostonians wonder how much longer they'll have to wait to see changes that make a difference in their lives. Standing in the grassy lot at the book fair, Jazara Pierre runs her hands through her almost 3-year-old son's hair. She wonders how he might think of the police when he's older.
It's not going to happen within a year or two. It's going to take a long time, and I'm hoping by his generation he'll notice a difference compared to what we are dealing with now and then what, you know, the future generation will have to deal with.
Those running for mayor, though, hope to surprise people like her.
That report from WBUR's Allie Jarmanning. One of the voices you heard in that story was Reverend Ray Hammond, pastor of Bethel AME Church and a member of the Black Ministerial Alliance 10-Point Coalition. He joins us now to talk more about this issue. Reverend Hammond, welcome to Radio Boston.
Great to be here. Thank you so much. Good.
So I know you were a part of that story, but I'd love to hear, what's your reaction hearing that piece?
Well, I think I definitely agree with Jamal Crawford. We're talking about a long haul process, and the issue of police reform, like the issue of healthcare reform, like the issue of faith community sexual abuse reform, like the issues of medical malpractice reform, or et cetera. These are long haul culture changing processes, and you have to be in it for the long haul, that you're not in it at all.
It's interesting to hear you say that. I know this is an issue you've been working on for a long time. You co-founded the Boston 10-Point Coalition in 1992. How are you reflecting on where we are right now in terms of addressing this issue?
Well, I'm encouraged in the sense that I think we could be at an inflection point not unlike one I've seen before, about 30 years ago, not very close to the founding of the 10-Point Coalition. It was a combination of what I would consider the perfect storm of the Charles Stewart case in around 1990. The stop and frisk debacle that followed that case and that actually preceded it as well. And then the St. Clair report in 1992 that detailed the management failures and lack of transparency and accountability in the BPD. I really do think that that set the stage for the introduction of community policing, not just here in Boston and other cities as well. In part driven by a succession of police commissioners. And I think it produced some real changes, but there is still a deep need for change in police culture, and not just a change in the police commissioner or even the command structure.
It's interesting seeing these echoes 30 years later. We just had so much back and forth over the last year or so. Massachusetts passed, I believe, a 129-page police reform bill. Some critics say there isn't enough teeth to that and that it's not leading to real reform. We've already seen a couple of deadlines missed in that. Are you hopeful that we are tackling this in a real way, or do you think that there still needs to be more honest conversation around these issues?
Well, again, I mean, I think we've put some important policies in place. I think this package of reforms was passed by the state. I think this Office of Accountability here in the city, all of these are very promising. What I think we have to keep our eye on is the fact that a deeply entrenched multi-century culture has to be changed. It's got to be changed. And it's got to be not just, as I say, at the top, it's got to permeate and get down to the bottom roots. Now, there are a lot of things that go along with that. I think different kind of recruitment, absolutely different kind of training, a clear statement about who we are and who we are not. I hope we are not warriors. I hope that we are public servants who are partnering with communities to gain their own, you know, their safety, their security, their flourishing. I think there's a whole culture of accountability. Sadly, I think the police departments have gotten a pass. And it's only when you have these kind of multiple crises showing, you know, pretty significant corruption, whether it's sexual abuse on the part of police union leadership or all the things that were detailed in that report, that people step back for a moment and say, hey, we can deeply appreciate the work of the good officers, but there's real problems. There's a blue wall of silence that tries to obstruct investigations into misconduct. There's a lack of transparency. And there are a whole series of things, from qualified immunity to the lack of licensure, basic licensure for people who can deprive other folks of their life or liberty. So there's a lot that's got to be done, and I'm hopeful that this is the moment that we can begin to do it.
You mentioned accountability a couple of times there. I was looking back. The Boston Globe did a big look back at 4 years of data of complaints about interactions with the police last summer, and found that basically most of the time nothing happens, and there's, as you said, zero transparency in terms of resolving these complaints. Some of the most serious allegations, say use of force allegation, sustained 3% of the time. And it can take years for these complaints to be addressed.
Absolutely.
What does that do to the relationship with the community when they're at least?
I think it seriously undermines it. I mean, the notion that 3% of the time you're wrong. I don't know of any other profession that's got that kind of record. Mm. I don't know of any other profession that has that small a percentage of bad actors who don't need to be rooted out. I've been a physician. I'm now a pastor. And I am grateful that in the profession of medicine, we've had moments when the issues of quality concern and the cost in disability and lives of medical errors finally began to be addressed. And it's not over yet. I am grateful that in the case of misconduct, abuse, harassment, you name it, on the part of clergy of every faith tradition, not just the Roman Catholic Church, every faith tradition, that we are finally taking the covers off of behavior that has gone on forever and for which there was no accountability. I have no idea why police think they also shouldn't be accountable. When you carry a gun, when you have the authority again, by your arrest, by your interrogation, by your investigation or suppression of evidence to deprive me of life and liberty, you have to be accountable. So there's just a terrible culture in many respects within the departments. And then I think the surrounding society is finally just realizing that lack of accountability and transparency is bad for everybody. Most of all, bad for good police officers who are trying to do the right thing.
You talked to Ali about what you hope to hear in terms of tone from the next mayor. This is obviously an issue that's going to be big in the Boston mayoral race. Can you talk more about that and what specifically you want to see from Boston leadership?
Well, I think the next mayor has to continue, as I think mayors have, but you continue, and I think vigorously to, again, support that Office for Police Accountability and Transparency, support the state post process, insist on better data. We should not have to wait weeks and weeks and weeks to get quality information about the conduct of police operations. The next mayor has to be very clear that there will be an end of the blue wall and that they're going to do everything they can to counter what I think is very often, I'm not saying it's always true, but very often in police quarters, the kind of us against them mentality that sustains and reinforces that wall and that allows bad actors to get away. As I say, the greatest threat to good cops is not the public who pay their salary, but the bad cops who are bought off, who abuse the overtime system, who steal from the evidence room, or who knowingly send innocent people to jail, or physically or mentally abuse citizens. We got to do something about the influence of police unions, and I hope the next mayor will be willing to take that on. And we got to do something about qualified immunity, which is just another means of avoiding accountability.
You've talked about how this is a cultural problem, a deep systemic issue. How much influence do you think the next police commissioner can have over Boston Police? How important is that selection, and what would you be looking for?
I think it will be very important, because if the next commissioner comes in and simply wants to make the public feel better about their relationship with their police, there's all kinds of things they can do. I'm not trying to be, you know, negative or pejorative, but it'll kind of be window dressing. If you've got a police commissioner who understands that this is a moment, as I say, my assessment, not unlike the moment we faced 90, 91, 92, when practices really could be changed substantively, and a culture could be at least the beginning of changes could be brought about, and makes the most of that moment, gets the backing of the mayor, reaches out to the public for support, and basically makes an offer to the good officers. I want to stand with you, and we want to make this department something you can be proud of being a part of, something that is respected and appreciated for what it does. But that means together we have to change what has been. We've got to root out some people who don't belong here, and we've got to become real partners, not adversaries, of the public we're supposed to serve. And every part of that public, every racial group, every gender identity, everybody has to see us as their partner.
We've talked about this issue a lot, especially in recent years on the show, and heard from a lot of different voices involved. One of those, Larry Calderoni from the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association, often talks about the fact that as this conversation is happening, officers don't necessarily feel supported, that they feel they're putting their lives on the line, and that if we're bringing in civilian oversight, that some of those folks might not understand what the job is actually like and what that decision-making process involves. What's your response to that sort of pushback?
Again, I understand the feeling. I heard the same thing from my medical colleagues when the issues around medical malpractice were brought up. I heard the same things from my clergy colleagues. Very few professions, almost none, accept accountability well. And they're rightly concerned that people who don't understand the kind of hard decisions that they have to make are going to be judgmental, are going to interfere, are going to make it difficult. And I understand for police officers, the fear is, it isn't just the loss of my reputation, or even maybe the loss of my job, could be the loss of my life. Got it. I would say there the key piece is, you, like I as a pastor or as a physician or whoever, also have to educate the public. Here are the things that are at stake. Here are the life and death decisions we're making. Here are the challenges that we face. But again, it's going to be hard for people to take you seriously if you're not willing to root out yourselves the bad actors and the problematic approaches that every profession has. And if you're not willing to do that, if you're not willing to identify and deal with those things, the public has every right to believe that you are either just like those bad actors, or you are enabling them.
I have, sorry to jump in. I have a ton more I could ask you, but we are running a little short on time. So I guess I just want to ask you, what do you want folks to walk away from this conversation thinking about as we move forward?
Well, again, I think we're at a pivotal moment. I hope good officers hear the cries for people to say, let's take off the plate of the police many of the mental health interventions. That's not what they're trained to do. Even much of the domestic violence work in a primary role, that's really not what they're trained to do. Or school interventions or a number of other things. So my hope would be people wouldn't simply say that that's some version of defund the police. It's often people saying, let's ask police to do what they're trained to do. And then let's understand that as the public, we have a dual responsibility. We should support the police when they're right, and we should always be holding the police accountable so that if and when they're wrong, the appropriate action is taken and the people who are not good police officers are off the force. If they're guilty of crimes, they're tried and convicted and given the appropriate sentence.
Well, that's Reverend Ray Hammond, pastor of Bethel AME Church and a member of the Black Ministerial Alliance 10-Point Coalition. Reverend Hammond, thanks so much for the time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Chris.